sincerely Reese, and this is my podcast. I would have started sooner, but I was sitting on my ass. No, I'm just playing. I'm hella productive, but not in ways everyone finds constructive. Content? I don't know. My real plan is just to go with the flow, you know, and tell my truth about my family, making music, self-care, and who I strive to be. Some people say, you don't talk. That's not true. The truth is, I just don't talk to you. So antisocial? Not really me. I'm just selective with whom I exchange energy. This here is my journey, no longer misunderstood. Welcome to my podcast, kinda hippie, kinda hood. What's up? Welcome back to the Kinda Hippie, Kinda Hood podcast. I'm your host, Siri Larice. Today's co-host wears many hats. He is an Afro-vegan chef, an indoor urban gardener, a blogger, gardening. Credentials run super deep. So I'm excited to welcome Chris Riddick, the host of the Afrobeats podcast. Welcome, Chris.
Thank you for having me.
And I'm so stoked to chat with you today.
I'm excited too. I've been a fan of yours for a long time, and I love your intro. Sometimes I just go through and listen to the intro, to be honest with you.
Thank you. At first, when I first did, I was like, man, is that a little too silly? I'm like, nope, I'm keeping it.
No, it's perfect. Don't change it there.
Thank you. So we originally connected on Instagram, the gardening community, you know, and it was pretty immediately off and popping. Like the gardening community on Instagram, well, the Black gardening community, especially on Instagram, is so legit. Like, I was wasting my time on Facebook for way too long.
I know. It's crazy. I'm like, where did all these people come from? Man?
I had no idea. I love the content you share. You are like a real, real agriculture activist. Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in the DC metropolitan area. So we call it the DMV. I grew up in Largo, Maryland, and then moved to Montgomery County, Maryland. So I've been in this area for most of my life. My mom's a Washingtonian, so I kind of claim DC. I kind of claim Virginia. I got family there. So I just say DMV.
Nice. And has gardening always been a part of your life?
No, not at all. Actually, it's crazy. This journey kind of began like 2 years ago. Like, I was a completely different person than I am now. I hadn't even sown a seed before like 2 years ago.
Wow. I didn't know that. So what encouraged you to go down that path?
So it's a real interesting story. So I was in this AmeriCorps program called City Year in Boston. I lived in Boston for about 2 years, in Massachusetts for like 6 years, because I went up there for school and I needed something to do out of college. So I was like, oh, I'll do this program.
I'm actually familiar with AmeriCorps. I knew somebody who participated in Chicago.
Oh, awesome. Awesome. Yeah, it's a good program. I think everybody should do like a year.
Sure.
Just like it's definitely like eye-opening and, you know, opened a lot of opportunities for me.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, I did the AmeriCorps program for 2 years in Boston, and we would do these service projects on MLK Day where we go to different places and, you know, volunteer and help out. We do like painting murals, you know, bag lunches, things like that. And so the project I got stuck on by chance was with this company called Fresh Truck. And Fresh Truck was basically this organization who went around to basically food deserts and provided food via like old school bus, like school buses that have like a ton of mileage on it. They converted school bus into basically like produce markets.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, it's so cool. They would go into like neighborhoods where people can have access to those, you know, good greens and produce. And they would go to, you know, people that looked like my community and, you know, my area. So I kind of got like hooked from there. I went down like a little bit of a rabbit hole. I was like, okay, first of all, what's a food desert? Because I had never heard of that term before. Like I had been actually living in a food desert at that time, because when you're doing an AmeriCorps program, you living in the hood most of the time, like you're not making that much money. And so I was like, oh snap, like I live in a food desert. I was like, what can I do to like better my situation here? And when I went down that rabbit hole, I started, you know, learning about people like Ron Finley, the Gangster Gardener.
Yes.
I actually ended up doing a project for like the AmeriCorps program on food deserts and farmers markets and stuff like that. So I was deep in it. And I was like, let me, you know, try to do something. And one day I was like, you know what? I'm going to just start doing it. and kind of see what happens. And the first thing I ever grew, first thing I tried to grow was like herbs, like lavender, which
Oh
is
my
not
gosh, listen.
the hardest thing to grow, especially if you're in Boston and it's about to be wintertime. Like I didn't know anything about anything, I'm telling you.
Wait, listen, I started with lavender too. And
Really?
I tried some seed and I failed like time and time again. Like wrong conditions, wrong containers, not enough water, too much like my lavender is still kind of struggling, honestly.
It's so crazy, like that I had the audacity to think I could grow lavender my first time around. Like I was like traveling at the time too. My poor things were like dried out, like they were barely hanging on. Like so, I didn't know anything about anything. I was like, all right, this kind of sucks, but I'm gonna keep going.
Right.
And first thing I was able to successfully grow in these like grow bags on my porch was these radishes.
Nice.
And like, because I was like, oh, radishes are supposed to be easy. I can grow a radish. It was literally like the puniest, tiniest thing, but
It still counts.
it was like a radish the size of my thumb. It was like a big thing. And I'm sorry, I probably called it out too early because I got so excited. I saw the little head and I was like,
Right.
yeah. Okay. But I was so proud of that little radish, man. Like, I couldn't believe it.
Oh,
Like,
that's
I was just so
amazing.
proud. And since then, I've been growing. And yeah, I actually decided, I started getting some production in the garden. And I was like, oh, I don't want to waste all this like hard effort I put into this soil. Like, I gotta even start cooking or start learning how to cook. And I had a little bit of a cooking background, but like nothing like, I'm doing now. And so
Right.
the
So,
thing.
all right, last for 1 second. You there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
So I think, a common misconception amongst people who live in homes with minimal outdoor space or no outdoor space is that they can't garden at all,
Yeah.
And I mean, I've gardened out of soup cans. Like you can garden out of anything as long as there's a little bit of light. Yeah. And you have a beautiful indoor window garden. And I love how you share your space on social media because it's very approachable, and I think you break down indoor gardening for people like in a way who can't really visualize what they can do on their own. Like they don't think they can grow anything beyond herbs.
Right. Yeah. It's been challenging. Right now I'm only really growing like okra and like a couple of like flowers and stuff like that, but it's whatever you can like envision, you can pretty much do, if you start building and learning the tools to like bring it all together.
Absolutely. What kind of vegetables and herbs thrive for you indoors?
I like you said, herbs are definitely, something that does well. That's where I always tell people to start off. But I've also successfully grown tomatoes indoors. I've grown eggplant indoors. Just like learning. A lot of it is like honestly, it was just trial and error. I didn't need to go through some of the processes I did, but you can learn a lot just by just trying to grow stuff. But there's so many resources now. Like you don't need to go through trial and error. You can look up how do I grow eggplants indoors, how do I grow tomatoes indoors, and there'll be like five different ways to do it, and so yeah, I've successfully the tomatoes I was definitely like proud of because it was like a lot of them for like a window area,
Nice.
and I had to do like a do-it-yourself kind of like tomato tower to fit like my plant. Like I didn't know what I was doing at first. Like I was literally growing in like a 6-inch pot like tomatoes, and somehow I got like production from that 6-inch pot.
Nice.
Like it's crazy. Yeah, I've also tried to grow other things like sunflowers. I grew like a small cucumber actually, like in my window. It took like so much work just to get that small
Right,
thing, and
for sure.
vines like took over, but it was still like cool to see. Now I'm more like practical with like how I grow. I think of, what's a higher turnover rate as far as like how long it takes from something to get to seed to actually harvesting to kind of make it worth it.
Right.
But I'm always trying new things,
That's cool. So, do you incorporate the food you grow at home into your vegan dishes that you make?
Yeah, as much as I can, absolutely. I did like kale over the winter, which is leafy. Surprisingly easy indoors. They grow pretty much just as well. depending on what it is, you know, in the window. But I did a dish called Caldo Verde, and it's basically a Cape Verdean Portuguese soup, and it has like different meat substitutes I put in there, and it was just absolutely delicious. So I tried to like connect people to the land through the food, like
right.
making people realize that, oh, gardening is just like another side thing. And like, no, it's like essential. Like you need to garden in order to get the good food, the good nutrients that, you know, provide your body what they need.
Absolutely. With that, how did you come down the path of Afro-vegan cuisine?
Yeah. So around the time, there's a lot of growth in these last couple of years, I have to say.
Ditto, like, man. Like, it's the season, you know?
It's crazy. I, like, had to basically take – I basically wanted a way to, like, explore culture. It seemed, like, so overwhelming, like, tracking, like, my African – roots and like trying to figure out more who I am through culture besides, you know, just what they teach us in school. I thought food would be a great way to do that because otherwise it was just too overwhelming. Like there's so much information out there. And so I was like, okay, I'm going to discover each part of the diaspora through food. So I started looking at, you know, how to make a Jamaican like beef patty, how to, you know, cook jollof, like rice, like things like that. And so really cultural dishes, not only cultural dishes, cultural crops. So when you think of cultural crops, I think of like okra, I think of the Scotch bonnet pepper, which is, you know, key flavoring in like Caribbean and Jamaican dishes. And so I use food as basically a time machine, like a history book to go back and discover new things that I haven't discovered before.
Absolutely. That's so cool. You know, the history of traditional Black, like a traditional Black household menu doesn't really sing the praises of a plant-based diet beyond collard greens. And yeah. I think that, you know, the list of reasons why someone chooses to be vegetarian or vegan are pretty wide, you know, like I changed to being vegetarian because I was spending more time at local urban farms and learning more about raising chickens and goats. And like, I got overwhelmed because I just didn't feel like I could consume animals anymore once I started cuddling them regularly. Like it was just so weird for me. So I couldn't do it. And when I started reading your blog and seeing your posts, like, it all just made so much sense because I really think the Black community doesn't understand that amazing flavorful food can still be plant-based, you know?
Yeah, it's all a misconception. And by the way, like we as a culture have been using plant-based diets, you know, when you think of like the Rastafarian cultures.
Yeah.
And cultures, a lot of their stuff is, you know, plant-based. It's not necessarily rooted in like a bunch of meat and things like that.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. It's like the further I connect with agriculture and dig deeper into Black folks' experience with farming and land access or lack thereof, I really find myself settling into this zone of a different level of awareness and a heightened accountability for my contributions to the planet.
Right.
As well as my body. And so really one of the first things that changed for me when I committed to like a more self-sustainable life was becoming vegetarian. But really everything completely shifted for me when I did that, you know, and part of that shift was starting this podcast. And you have a podcast as well, the Afro Beats podcast. And so I'd love for you to talk more. I mean, we kind of talked a little bit about what you share on social media and your website, but I'd love for you to share more specifically about your podcast because it's absolutely fantastic.
Thank you. Yeah, so it's actually, you know, when you're starting a podcast, you have no idea what you're doing most of the time. You're just like putting stuff and kind of seeing what sticks. And
yes.
So I just had 100, the first 100 episodes of my podcast is just everything that's in my head, just like trying to figure out what works.
Right.
But I think what I'm leaning to now is to focus on the stories behind the food.
Okay.
Right now, I have kind of like two parts of my podcast. One part is like the interview segment where I talk to different like Afro-vegan chefs, people who are, you know, living the plant-based life, people of color who span the African diaspora, and getting their perspective on food. Because one, I want to know, like, when I create my menu and I eventually get my business up and running and, you know, do catering and do different, you know, wear different hats, I want to know what other people know from their cultures and kind of dissect their minds and like pick their brains on what is the food that they actually grew up with and how are they making it plant-based? How are they, you know, putting in culture to like everything they do? Like, that's really important to me, just getting our perspective. Cause I don't think that's out there. I think, you know, right. When you say Afro anything, it's still new to people, like Afro cuisine, like Afro culture.
Sure.
You know, I got people who are going to be on the podcast who are, you know, consider themselves Afro-Latina and like that's a whole new concept to like most people, and people don't even know, you know, how many of us are actually in these like different parts of the countries. Like, we have no clue. And so I really want to uncover the stories through the food and then, you know, interview the people who have been living the food themselves.
Well, that's incredible.
Yeah. I'm really excited.
That's really cool. You know, I completely agree that starting a podcast, it's so hard, and finding a niche or your zone, like, I feel like it's an ongoing process to really figure out, you know, what's the message that you want to convey, and like what keeps you inspired, like what keeps you motivated, because you pump out a lot of content, like on your personal website, just your food recipe, your blogs, like your social media, you're busy, so like How do you keep going?
First, you know, I love what I do. That's the first thing. Like, making sure whatever I'm doing, it resonates with my spirit. Like, it resonates with what I believe in. I also I'm selfish and selfless at the same time, where, you know, I want to create things that I'm kind of itching my own scratch. Like, a platform that I'm like making is something I wish was already out there.
Right.
But it's not. So if no one's going to do it, you know, why not me? And so that is itching my own scratch, but I'm also there to like help people and educate people. Like, I love when people come and ask me questions on like, how do I make this plant-based, or what can I do to make this, you know, plant grow better? Like, I live for that. Like, that's the best feeling in the world for me. Mm-hmm. Just helping people and just teaching people through my journey, because I'm, like I said, I started this journey 2 years ago, and everything I put out is more of a documentation than me saying like, oh, I'm an expert, like I know everything.
Right. Like, your content is so incredibly approachable and authentic. And I think that is just so important.
Absolutely. Because like, I don't want to get stuck in a moment where like, you know, I don't want to pretend something that I'm not. Like, yeah. All I want to do is, you know, be happy, do put out content that makes me happy, and, you know, help others. And
yeah,
I think people learn a lot more from your mistakes sometimes, even from, you know, your successes as well.
Sure, especially if you're willing to share them, you know.
yeah.
So do you have anyone in particular that, like, you know, we talked about Ron Finley. He's local here to Los Angeles, and the work he does is unbelievable, and I was actually pretty late to the game of learning about him, only about 3 or 4 years ago. Learned about him, but is there anyone in particular that you have on your wish list to be on your podcast?
Man, I mean, there's so many. I don't know if you've been keeping up lately, but I've actually been doing a takeover at a different podcast called the Edible Activist Podcast.
Yes, oh my gosh, can we talk about that? Please talk about that, because it's unbelievable.
Like, that's an amazing story in itself, because what Melissa's doing over at that platform is like, it's crazy how many people I connect with. Like, everybody on that podcast has like motivated me in some kind of way, and they're all like around my age. Some are a little bit older, and it's like young people who want to make a difference in like the DC food space and beyond. Like, I thought I was alone,
right?
And wanting to make a difference, and to know like there's that many people and they're doing such a great job. Like, now because of that podcast, I know where to, like, get my like black owned like flower shop. I know where to go to get my spices, like an ice cream place. Like, just like being open to not being like Black business has like opened my eyes into like what is possible.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it just allows me to network and pick their brain and be like, you know, how did you do that? Like, how did you run this event? Like, how did you put yourself on the map like that? And,
right.
You know, it was a pleasure and a great opportunity for me to like co-host and also like run the podcast for like the month of July. And I just learned so much just being on that podcast.
It was so cool. The series was so cool. I loved how accessible it was to tune in. I hadn't heard of the podcast until you started posting about it on social media. So I was completely stoked.
Awesome.
How did you connect with them?
Yeah. So Melissa actually reached out to me like last year. This was before I was even, you know, getting super comfortable with what I was posting. I was just kind of like, you know, doing that thing where I kind of see what sticks.
Yeah.
And, you know, at first I was like, you know, I don't know if I'm good enough to be with these other people. Like it was honestly like insecurity for me. It was like, I don't know if I'm like there yet. Like I, you know, everything was happening so fast with my platform. You know, I had like self-doubt.
Right.
But then I was just like, you know what? If it doesn't work, why not? Like I'll go on, see what happens. And, you know, I think it was a great episode, and Melissa thought so too, enough to like want to keep connecting with me. She brought me back on for another, and then we just kind of talked at one of the events that from the people she interviewed, and she's like, you know, I'm trying to figure out, you know, business and stuff like that. Why don't you come in host for like the month of July? And I was like, sure. And it was just like, what's the worst that could happen, you know?
Right.
That's just kind of my mindset with like everything. Like there's so many like scary kind of like things that could have like held me back, but I went for it. Like recently I had a event that I did. It was my first pop-up event that I got invited to like host and cater. And, you know, we did some like snacks for them. And I had never done an event that big. It was like 50 people or so. Mm-hmm. And so I made like making veggie patties, and I did like a signature dish for the event. And, you know, it was scary because, you know, I didn't know how everything was going to fall together, but it ended up being success. And, you know, I'm glad I made that jump, even though I learned a lot of lessons and made some mistakes. You know, I'm glad that I continue to like push myself and, you know, do things like that.
I sometimes I have to remind myself that just because I'm fearful of something doesn't mean I shouldn't do it. You know, it just means it's a new experience that I have yet to experience. And on the other side of fear could be some really cool opportunities or big lessons, you know?
For sure. For sure. And on the same like side of that coin, like I'm also learning that I shouldn't feel pressured to do something just because things are happening. Maybe in your time, like that's the lesson I'm learning right now. I'm learning that I don't need to say yes to everything just because it's a good opportunity. I mean, it's right for me, you know, right in that time.
It's totally cool to say no.
Yeah, I'm constantly learning and evolving and, you know, just trying to take my time and be patient as my brand grows, as, you know, my business grows, just taking my time.
That's so cool. So do you feel like your life has changed in a positive way by becoming vegan and exploring gardening and plant-based lifestyles?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I'm like so much happier, like in my body. Like I wake up with like so much energy. I get excited to wake up. Like once I started eating right and, you know, took animals out of my diet, like that's what kind of put me onto veganism in the first place. I actually started veganism on a dare, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Like first of all, for the background, like I was that kid who like ate like everything. I was always athletic, so I was always able to like burn it off. And
right.
I'm always up and down and running around and stuff like that. But I would eat everything. If somebody was like, oh, I don't think I want to finish this. Anybody want this? Like, I was like, come on. I got you. And so somebody was like, we were talking about veganism. It came up in a conversation. I think it was like my city year friends and my AmeriCorps friends. And there's like, oh, you couldn't go vegan. Like, I was like, I could do it for like 2 weeks. And they were like, nah. I was like, you know what? I'm going to do this. Let's give it a shot. And I had no idea what I was doing. I didn't know what it was. I was like, oh, you just eat these greens, and I guess that's it. Like, what?
Walk around hungry.
Yeah, I was mad hungry all the time. I was eating, like, Cliff Bars and stuff like that just to, like, stay full. I did not know what I was doing. But even though I wasn't doing it perfect, like, I could definitely feel the change in my body, like in a weird way. Like it felt like I had like superpowers or something. I never had so much energy. I had never been so clear-minded. Ideas like kept surging to me. Like it was crazy.
That's nuts. So like at what point did you decide to make it a permanent change?
I think I started off New Year. Was it? Was this 2019, right?
I don't know, man.
I don't even know. It's a long year. I think it was the beginning of 2018 when I officially decided, all right, I'm going to do this for real now. Like, I want to make a change.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I also had, like, health issues in my family.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't want to continue to, you know, I didn't want it to be a generational thing. I wanted to start those good habits on early so right. that I get older and I have kids, you know, I can learn how to heal myself with food and, you know, just take responsibility for, you know, what I eat. And so I wanted to get that a lock on that earlier on. So that definitely had an effect on me.
Man, you know, I totally understand that. And are your friends and family, are they vegan as well? Are they plant-based lifestyles?
They are not. They are not. I mean, like some of my friends like that I met online, but for the most part, no. People were like real surprised that I took this turn.
Sure.
First of all, look, I do well in science in school. Like science was my worst subject in school. Like I couldn't like wrap around it. It was kind of like boring to me because it was mostly like book work and like they right. try to teach their book where like now I think science is amazing, obviously.
Yeah.
But like they just did the way they packaged it to me wasn't great and I couldn't sure. relate to it. But now like I love it. I forgot where I was going with that. But yeah.
Science is the bomb. So I read a blog post of yours. It was a couple months ago, and it really resonated for me. It was the piece about why Black people need to go back to the land.
Yeah.
And it's so spot on, especially when it comes to, like you were saying, not repeating past generation stuff, you know, and healing and like the spiritual healing that actually transpires when you're interacting with the earth. And I just think it's so important to share that message with the Black community and for them to understand, like, it's, your blog is amazing. Like, I love your podcast. I love all the content you put out is so incredible. And I feel like each zone, though, is all connected, is slightly different. Like, it's giving a little bit of a different narrative, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's important. Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think that's important to switch the narrative. Like sometimes people post the same things on each platform, but each yeah. platform, like a native storytelling to each platform. So.
Yeah, absolutely. And blogging and podcasting both are really time consuming work. So like I give you mad props for your dedication to producing like actual good, delicious content like on different platforms.
Because it's a struggle for real. I'm always working to try to be more consistent, but I just do the best I can, you know?
Yeah, that's all we can do. So do you teach as well, right?
I do not anymore. I was okay. a teacher.
Oh, okay. Yes. So do you still do the edible gardening program? I remember seeing some posts with kids gardens and.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah, I can definitely talk a little bit about that. Yeah. Even though I'm not teaching anymore, I'd still love to do something with kids. I think to get them at that early of an age
yeah.
and teach them about the land and how where their food comes from is like so important. Yeah, I used to kind of do like a weekly post of like I would do like Garden Club Tuesdays or something like that. And yeah, I loved working with the kids, like just seeing their faces when they tasted like a fresh strawberry that they picked themselves for the first time, like was like mind-blowing to me. Like I was like, this should be like a regular part of the curriculum. Like every kid should be experiencing this, not just like my class, not just this garden club.
Absolutely.
And like I don't understand why it's not a part of like the major curriculum mm-hmm. at the school when food is everything and you know, especially nowadays where there's so much poison and, you know, misrepresentation of what we put into our bodies. Like, I think it's now more important than ever to incorporate that in the school. And there's so many skills you're learning in the garden. You're learning math, you're learning science. You're just incorporating everything. It's a life skill. You're actually going to use it when, like, you know, algebra or whatever.
Absolutely. It's definitely a lost art. Somewhere it got lost in translation that digging in the dirt was not cool. And it turns out it's the absolute coolest, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so, it's tough.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I resonated with your last podcast episode, one of your last ones, about homeschooling. It just made me start thinking about different ways we go about our education system and, you know, how we're teaching our kids. And that was kind of like one of the reasons I kind of like left teaching, because I didn't necessarily resonate with everything, you know, that.
I get that.
Yeah. And so it's always challenging, but yeah.
And it's hard as an educator because you have this innate devotion to want to work with children and teach children and show them different ways how things can be done. But it happens, you know, in the public school system and the private school system that there are still boxes that have to be checked. And so a lot of things can fall through the cracks when that happens, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's so, definitely a politicalized
system. Man, I'm saying. Absolutely. So what do you have on like your goal list or your vision board? What do you have forecasted for yourself?
There's so much, man. I really want to continue to obviously grow my platforms, but I just want food to like be the guidance on like everything I do. I want to bring more experiences to people, do more events, pop-ups, where I can use food as a tool to educate people and storytell.
Yeah.
Growing no matter what their conditions are, you know, in their window. Like if they could see, if I could get more production out of my window and like just start cooking from my window, like how powerful would that be?
And, unbelievable, you know, for sure.
How many people would get motivated to at least try, like knowing that I don't have land, you know? Mm-hmm.
That's incredible and totally attainable, you know?
For sure. I also want to do like this. I have this idea for a show.
Okay.
I want to be like the like next like Anthony Bourdain, but like for like Afro-veganism or something.
Yes, I'm here for that.
That concept, you know? So I'm working on that.
Yeah.
But
you should definitely do that.
For sure.
For sure. So beyond gardening, we have a mutual appreciation for 90s R&B and hip hop.
Every time you play any kind of music, I'm like, she's literally on my phone right now.
So I thought it would be fun to play a game of this or that. Okay. So I'm going to give you two 90s artists or song titles, and you tell me which one of the two is your bigger jam.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Let me get my list. All right. 90s R&B, this or that. TLC or Salt and Pepper?
Ooh. I've got to go TLC.
I know. It's tough, right?
I think they're more influential. Like, yeah.
Okay. I Want to Be Down by Brandy or Don't Take It Personal by Monica.
Want to Be Down by Brandy, and I just heard the remix to that. I didn't even know there was.
With the rap verses.
Oh man, Queen Latifah, MC Light, like
yeah,
oh,
It's fire. Okay, Genuine or Usher?
Ooh, that's tough. Pony alone like makes Genuine an icon, but I think Usher got more of a catalog for me.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I think Usher is a little bit more of my time too, so I'll go Usher.
Okay, okay. Well, wait. How old are you?
I'm 26.
Okay. That's cool. I love that.
Usher kind of seeped into the 2000s a little bit.
Sure, way more than Ginuwine did. Ginuwine fizzled out mid-90s, no doubt.
Okay.
Oh, for sure. So, Knockin' the Boots by H-Town or Freak Like Me, Adina Howard?
I can't get it. I love that.
Right, like, opening holler alone, you know?
On that intro, man. You can't beat that intro. The intro. You know they're about to kill it once that intro came on, yeah.
Hey, man, hollering.
Yeah, but they all, Adina also, like, that record's been recycled a lot in hip-hop and, like, R&B.
Absolutely. Yeah. Like, it doesn't get enough credit because it's around still, you know?
Right, right. I don't even think people know who, like, Adina is like that, but.
No, they don't. They don't.
She was in a group. Wasn't she in like Cut Close or something like that?
Was she in Cut Close?
I think so. I think she was the lead singer of Cut Close. Was she?
Oh my gosh.
You gotta look that one. I don't know about that.
Fact check that one.
I'm pretty sure, but I think that's true.
Man, I did not know that. I'll look that up for sure. Yeah. Okay, so SWV or Escape?
SWV.
Okay.
Cadillac's too strong.
For sure. Hey, Mr. DJ, Jeanne, or My Boo by Ghost Town DJs.
Ooh. Nah, I'm gonna admit to you, I did not know of Ghost Town DJs, that song, until that meme came out or that like viral. I unfortunately did not know, so I'm gonna go.
No.
Just because I feel like a Fig fan if I say Ghost Town DJs. I don't know how that one passed me. It's such a good song, but like.
That's the jam.
Oh, man.
Okay. Yeah. So obviously Jeanne on that one.
I mean, you can't not dance to that one.
No, for sure. Yeah. And they're another one with a huge catalog, too. They have like bop after bop.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The Ghost.
Okay, so last one.
Okay.
No Diggity by Blackstreet or This Is How We Do It, Montel Jordan.
I'm going to go Montel Jordan. Here's why.
Ooh.
No Diggity has been overly gentrified as a song.
Right.
I think Montel's song still has a little bit more, I don't know, like griminess to it. It's a little bit more, I don't know how to say it. It's cultural.
Uh-huh.
Diggity. I think I heard this really want this bad cover of No Diggity and just ruined the song for me. Really, like, I think it's like a country version or something like that.
Oh, sure. Sure. Yeah.
It's bad.
But like the OG, the original No Diggity with the Queen Pin rap in it, like, oh man, that one takes it over the edge for me, for This Is How We Do It as the comparison, like, ooh.
I just went to too many bars in Boston where that was on karaoke, like, time and time after again. I just couldn't do it anymore. I was just like, no.
Oh man. Dude, that was fun. Thank you for that. So, before we wrap up, will you share with our listeners where they can listen to your podcast, find your blog, and your social media?
Sure. So the podcast is The Afrobeats Podcast, beats spelled like the vegetable. Instagram, Afro_beats. You can visit the website, sign up for my newsletter at afrobeats.org. Again, everything is spelled like beats, and I think that's it. You can pretty much find everything through the site. So yeah, I think that's it.
Great. Thank you so much for this chat. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we'll talk soon.
All right, talk to you soon.
Listeners, if you want to chat about today's episode, please visit my social media at Siri Larice on Instagram or Facebook and leave your comments or questions on the infographic posted for the corresponding episode. You can also visit my website, www.sirilarice.com, and click the contact page and do the same. That wraps it up for today's episode of the Kinda Hippie, Kinda Hood podcast. I'm your host, Siri Larice. Until next time.